Okay, hi everybody, and welcome back. It's been a little while since I've been able to carry forward, maybe 3 days. And this next subject is very interesting. It's about divine intervention. We have to try to understand what this type of intervention is, because sometimes DK has said, well, it's really better if there is no divine intervention. And sometimes it seems to have been necessary and on a lower level than the absolutely catastrophic. I guess when the one of the three lords of liberation intervened in World War II, I think especially the Lord that was connected with freedom, Aquarius and Uranus, and helped the Western democracies develop the atomic bomb, especially the United States. That was basically an intervention which saved humanity from the fate which awaited it if the Axis powers had developed that bomb. So here we are on page 222. We began our work here on page 60, so we've done about, 160 pages or so. Let me now enlarge somewhat, says the Tibetan, on the possibility of divine intervention. Hovering today within the aura of our planet are certain great spiritual forces and entities awaiting the opportunity to participate actively in the work of world redemption, readjustment, and reconstruction. I mean, among these, as later described, assisting the Christ, was the and is the Spirit of Peace and the, well, maybe the Avatar of Synthesis, I think, linked up in 1945. Their presence is sensed at times by spiritually minded people of the world, and their reality is recognized by the mystics and occultists working in every land. I guess it takes some pretty extraordinary sensitivity to detect the presence of these really great beings. If you stop to think about it, well, the Avatar of Synthesis is linking up with the planetary logos. Which is the superior being? It's really hard to say, but the planetary logos, of course, is a cosmic being in a sense, and the three Buddhas of activity were already planetary logoi in a previous solar system. They worked along the intelligence line and the subrays 1, 2, and 3. Men and women express this recognition according to the trend of their religious and psychological training and their particular mental or emotional bias. The perception may be the same, but the means of expression different. The advent of Christ, or his second coming, is anxiously anticipated by many Orthodox Christians who regard this world war as indicating the end of the world and as preparatory to the appearance of the Christ to bring peace on earth. Now, that's even looked at today. The circumstances in the world today are looked at as the precursor to this great battle we call Armageddon. The true, if there is such a thing, it's going to be an anticipation of the real Armageddon, which occurs more at the judgment day, which really has to be millions of years ahead. Others, more orientally minded, await the appearance of an avatar who will transmit from God the needed world message or new type of energy. In other words, there is a great spirit of expectation here. That's the idea. Okay, wait a second. Let's see if I can get that. Yeah. Prophecy and astrology indicate a coming one, and there are many differing opinions seem to converge on him. All these are different methods of seemingly to describe something that is sensed and felt by those who are sensitive. Occultists invoke everywhere the forces of light, remember, from the monadic plane on up, and call for the appearance of that extra planetary potency to whom we give the name the Spirit of Peace. Notice that we are not yet talking in this 1940s, 1940s essay about the avatar of synthesis. All of this, is going on very high levels, which are basically shambolic in their coordination. Those with no religious or metaphysical bias recognize, however, that all times of emergency seem ever to evoke some changing world, some liberator or some man or group of men who are capable of changing world affairs and inaugurating under the stress and strain of the times the new and needed fresh cycle of civilization and culture. So the change is certainly anticipated. And, we have lived in a time when change has been inaugurated. What the final outcome of that will be and when the expression of it will occur, still remains, undecided or undetermined. Many refrain from specification of the requirements of such a coming one today because the magnitude and planetary nature of his task, because of the magnitude and planetary nature of his task, if we just for a few moments anticipate what the Christ would be facing, let us say, I guess we would, consider it to be overwhelming, except for such a great being, and his methods are not understood by us. He is a becoming seventh degree initiate, and we're still looking towards the true and first initiation. Because of the magnitude and planetary nature of his task, but they secretly hope and pray for his appearing. These are all the different attitudes that we have, as human beings towards the tension of this time and the resolution of the tension through the appearance of some powerful energy or force or individual who can lead us into emergence. Crisis, yes. Tension, yes. Emergence, yet to be. Still, others regard such an idea and hope as simply a psychological fulfillment and the embodiment of the wish life of the people, this time of humanity as a whole for the first time in racial history. This time of humanity as a whole, the wish life of humanity, and for the first time in racial history, though I don't think that is the case. There have been other times when avatars, depending on our language, have been anticipated and have come. Such people are apt to feel that this embodiment has no true substance or place in the life of mankind, but wish that it had. They forget that when a thought form has been constructed of sufficient potency, and maybe they never knew, and has been built over a long period of time by the people of the world, a further and final stage becomes ever possible. There's so many different types of minds, I have friends who are deeply in the work and other friends equally as good friends who think it's the veriest nonsense. But okay, what will be, will be. The form can be rendered so magnetic that it can attract an energy which will inform it and give it active potency. It can then become a vital link between the subjective world of energy and the objective world of forces, and a thing of power, of impelling and guiding activity, and therefore the expression of a life. Well, these are dynamic times, and the linking up of energies is occurring. And what we call the higher vibratory realms are impacting those which are lower, and there are etheric substitutions in process. And, you know, for people who don't know anything about the planes and the vibratory domains and the different stages of consciousness, all of this is just a fairy tale, but let us see how it works out. I think everyone will be quite amazed. So many people don't believe in any post-incarnational existence, but what will they do when, as the Tibetan says, they recognize it as a very familiar experience? Anyway, this thought form, duly informed, becomes a mediating factor constructed by humanity, but animated by the will to good of some great and spiritual entity. So we create the form through our expectation, our hope, our reason, our historical research, and so forth, and it becomes a possible instrument of a great entity who can use it. That thought forms embodying evil lives can be and are constructed is equally true, but we are not at this time, with these we are not at this time dealing. Now the battle is on between relative good and evil on our planet, and we have to understand the two distinct forces which are moving in opposite directions. And as human beings, under the fourth ray, we are particularly prone, because of our duality, to attraction from both sources. We come now to the significant point of what I have to say today in this connection. A great and vital thought form is in process of construction upon the planet and within our planetary aura. It is being built by the power of sound, by the magnetic pull of invocation, leading to eventual evocation, and by the force of desire substance animated by the power of thought. I wonder, is he talking about, you know, the invocations which we use? You know, as he's said before, regarding the great invocation, if you use it, it will cause tremendous changes in your life. And if humanity uses it with consistency and frequency, it will cause tremendous changes in the life of humanity. Now, he elaborates, it is being constructed by the united effort of the hierarchy of the world disciples and aspirants, of the men and women of goodwill in all nations, and also through the, and this is an important part, the inchoate, which means relatively formless, the inchoate longings of men everywhere, of all religious beliefs, political views, and group loyalties. So, you know, there's a great reaching up, an invocation, a demand, a longing, a hope. And this can reach to very high places. As a matter of fact, you know, when the Lords of Liberation responded, part of it was this kind of inchoate longing of masses of human beings. First, the demand, going forth with consistency and power, and then the response, which is the evocation. Evocation is the response. It is safely anchored upon the physical plane, is of vast proportions upon the astral or emotional plane, but lacks vitality and power upon the mental plane. And this is the This is the issue. Men want something better, but they don't know how really to think about it and to strengthen the mental structure of that which they are seeking. It is here within the realm of thought substance that the weakness of the structure of this thought form becomes apparent. It is already potent spiritually, owing to the scientific work of the occult hierarchy and their trained helpers, this spiritual, but of course that's in the realm of evocation. Whatever is evoked has first to be invoked, called for, and then comes the response. It is already potent spiritually, owing to the scientific work of the occult hierarchy and their trained helpers. This spiritual life relates the thought form to the waiting extraplanetary forces and can make their work possible and effective. So, you know, hierarchy is doing its part, certainly. You know, probably it will end upon the shoulders of the disciples and aspirants and men and women of goodwill, where the additional work has to be done. It is potent physically and emotionally through the work of the lovers of humanity, the well-meaning efforts of the emotionally oriented people, and the agonized longings of the masses who hate war, desire quiet, and demand peace and good living conditions, you know, so above and below. It is powerful, you know, this intermediate thought form, we might say. There is, however, a gap or hiatus upon the mental plane, for the minds of men are not functioning correctly. And here comes our work, I believe. You can kind of feel it coming here. The disciples and world aspirants are not thinking with clarity, nor are they working in unity. They are evading issues or are thinking separatively or nationally or fanatically. They are not convinced of the potency of invocation or of prayer. They are failing to realize that it is possible to work ardently for those conditions which will lead to peace, and yet fight simultaneously so that those conditions may be made available. They fail to love all men without exception. That's the demand, right? And their longing to see their own loyalties emerge triumphant. Let's see what it is. They fail to love all men in their longing to see their own loyalties emerge triumphant. They work doubtingly, hoping for the best, but believing in the worst. They use the method of prayer and invocation because such methods seem to have been successful in the past and because they are told that faith can move mountains, but they feel inwardly quite hopeless and uninspired and are not at all sure what faith intrinsically is. What is it really? You know, somehow it's a contact with a future and desirable condition, actual contact in the moment with such a condition with which must eventuate, contact with the energy of that condition. But they're not sure what faith intrinsically is. They realize that a united front and a spirit of joyful certainty are psychological assets of well-nigh invincible potency, but they feel unable to arouse within themselves the slightest enthusiasm. So this is a view of how things really are, and this demonstrates insufficiency. Now, what about today? You know, how do we feel about it? There are many things that are unresolved, and as we look at the forces of materialism making their comeback, how do we feel about that? Are we daunted? Or do we feel that we can overcome? So as the disciples of the world, they're not thinking with clarity, nor are they working in unity, that's for sure. And they are evading issues Yes. Well, this is quite, you know, this is. So, what do we have here? Another indictment of disciples. Well, you know, when we see an indictment, what do we do about it? We respond in the best way we can to avoid the Tibetan's justification. He points the correct way. You know, you can fight and still love all men without exception, and in their longing to see their own loyalties emerge triumphant. You can do this, but that's not understood. So, in other words, it's a we have here what we call a divided and thus less effective mentality than is desirable. This is a wonderful sentence. The united front and a spirit of joyous certainty are psychological assets of well-nigh invincible potency. But you know, they have lost their enthusiasm, and as we sometimes say, they've lost their faith. I don't know what they were expecting, you know, and when they were expecting it. There's some very interesting stories about Mother Teresa, how she soldiered on despite her loss of faith at certain times in her life. And, you know, she had a confessor, and later it came out, I don't remember how, but, you know, that she was really in spiritual despair. But she knew what was right to do, and she soldiered on doing it. So, let's just say this way, in our great battle for better conditions, sorry, can we preserve our faith and enthusiasm? Enthusiasm, you know, sort of the like inspiration, the breathing in of a God. Can we maintain our alignment so that we are animated by the great energies from above? Or do we just have to work on without inspiration, which is kind of a joyless affair? I guess we should be filled with the certainty, which our reason and intuition and faith reveal. Okay. It is this negative and lukewarm attitude. Remember how the lukewarm are spewed out of the mouth of God, and how Master Moria doesn't want to deal with the worms crawling in the half light on the battlefield. It's just, what if I can find that thing about worms? It's really a wonderful reminder that we better take a side and deal with it, you know. Worms. I'm not sure whether this is going to come up or not. It seems to be working on it, you know, as they say in the AAB extracts. Sometimes they have gleanings, they are called, from the Agni Yoga teaching, you know. Says it's working on it. Maybe I just have to press that. Well, I'll let the worms be discovered, but we don't, you know, want to be those types of lives that don't pick up the sword and don't fight for the particular side we've chosen. It's as if the master is saying, you know, you can almost do more with an enemy who has chosen sides than you can with the halfway types, you know. I think so. I'm looking for worms, and it says, whoop, of course not. No items match. Well, I'm not going to get my worms. Okay. I have to fish somewhere else. All right. But there it is, you know. And I dare say, if you go to the Agni Yoga website and you put in the word worms, you're not going to have long to wait, because it's probably not a term that is much used. You know, so there's this tremendous battlefield, and it's life and death situation, and there are others that are just kind of halfwayness, you know, crawling in the halfwayness. And that's one thing I'm going to try one more time, if you don't mind, because Maury is very against that halfwayness. No, and working on it, and no items match. All right, somewhere it is. So it is this negative, lukewarm attitude, this mental uncertainty, and this failure to link up the spiritual and the physical worlds in a positive relationship, which is holding back the forces of light and the actual presence of the Spirit of Peace. You know, it came later, as it surrounded, was one of the forces surrounding the Christ when he made up his mind that, yeah, he will return in physical form, and thus negativing the possible divine intervention. I like that word, and probably, I don't even know if it's a real word, or certainly should be, and thus negativing the possible divine intervention. And we just want to say, you know, obviously, from from higher planes. It is the test of group work. The faith of many individuals is real and deep, but they stand alone. The knowledge that the few have of the nature of the waiting forces of intervention is being negated by the faithlessness of the world disciples and aspirants. Boy, this is an indictment. You know, the statement, the indication of the guilt of people that the hierarchy is relying upon, people like you and me. And are we faithless? Are we, well, faithlessness, that's quite a word. Okay. Weighed down, okay. The faithlessness of the world disciples and aspirants, weighed down by world karma, by their own physical fatigue, and by their horror of the present situation, plus the difficulties of individual circumstances. So we want to say very hard circumstances on disciples. Is it as hard today? I don't know. I think it will become so, as these forces do everything they can. They're not dead yet, you know, and they won't be really until the judgment day, really, when banished from this particular planet will be those forces which oppose, and the sacredness of the planet, you know, probably a kind of lesser fifth initiation will be taken, just the way we have a lesser fourth initiation in progress. The cycles are very interesting, because you would expect that the kind of fifth initiation of which we talk could be taken maybe on this Mercury chain, which is part of our planetary scheme, but it looks like there's a kind of second cosmic initiation, and maybe even fifth initiation of a lesser type, that will be taken within our fourth planetary chain, in which the dense globe, not only dense, but the globe with the outer shell, is our Earth. So let's just see how weighed down by personal karma are we? How weighed down by world karma? How fatigued are we? You know, that can be a real problem for some of the older disciples. And, you know, he said, could wish you were all younger, so that he was speaking about their vitality. And then, of course, he was speaking about another factor. I wish you were more courageous. And maybe the exertion of courage would be an antidote to this kind of inertia, this kind of tamasic physical fatigue. I'm sure we've all had experience with it. And then by the horror of the present situation, it paralyzes you. We're not yet to that point, you know, but in World War II, remember, it was almost the situation of the Black Lodge conquering humanity, really. So that was horror. That was horror. Because they are, let's see, what are they? I'll look up their kind of horrible title again, you know. It's Lust, Pride, and Wicked. Not Wicked, but Wicked. And who are they, really? The Lords. It's an amazing statement. The nations of the world allied themselves with the forces of light to a very large extent, and little by little, cosmic evil was forced back, and the door which, quote, conceals the place of endless death and hides the countenances of the lords of wicked pride and hateful lust, was partially closed but not entirely shut. Its final sealing is not yet accomplished, and that's why they've been able to come forth with, human negligence and human misunderstanding, and offer us kind of a third onslaught, which is at this time subtle. We don't have the, on a world stage, the marching armies that are threatening to overcome one country or another. We don't have that yet, but of course it could lead to that. We must ever remain vigilant. We cannot imagine that we can relax at this point, not at all, because we know there is a real push to make sure that humanity does not enter the Aquarian Age in the right way. And if you enter the wrong way, you have mass destruction and epidemics and all kinds of things which spread rapidly over the entire humanity and negate the quality of life. The soul is the quality of life. Negate the soul. The problem can be most simply stated. Either the spiritual hierarchy exists with all its potencies of love, wisdom, and skill in action, or for ages humanity has suffered from hallucinations. It's good, you know, that he puts it this way, so one just has to get it. Either Christ and his group of masters, initiates, and disciples are facts in the natural processes of evolution, historically proven and known through their spiritual activity down the ages, or men have been the victims during those ages of a gigantic fraud emanating from what and where. Either the consistency of the evolving presentation of the spiritual effort of the hierarchy is a witness to a great reality, or mankind has developed a mentality which is an instrument for the fabrication of non-existent facts. And this is in itself so paradoxical as to give the lie to the inference. Although, you know, we do seem these days, the year is 2019, to live under the influence of a post-fact era, where by the liars in chief, alternative facts, depending upon your bias, are offered for you to choose between. And it doesn't make any difference what is real, what is actually happened, or what is happening. You just get to choose according to your preference. Either the spiritual worlds and the three worlds of human endeavor can be related, or there is nothing to past beliefs, to ancient stories of manifesting divinity, and to the constantly recurring periods of divine intervention. I mean, look at the birth of the Christ, you know, the angels, or the birth of Jesus, really. The angels appear and they tell the shepherds, be not afraid, you know. The wise men start off because of their astrological knowledge, takes them to a place where some great spiritual event is occurring. I remember kind of a conjunction that occurred. Was it Jupiter, Saturn, and Venus? Something of that nature. It was in Australia some time ago that I witnessed that, and the class members witnessed it, and we certainly had a sense of an unusually a dynamic and beautiful presence in part of the class, which was not the usual kind of energy with which we consistently dealt. So, you know, the idea behind this is, C-H-O-O, choose. Choose your alternatives here, and which side are you on? Are you on the side of hallucination and fraud and mass malfunction of the human mind, or does it seem that even though we do not see immediately these great spiritual realities on any broad level, that they do in fact exist? Yeah, the fabrication of non-existent facts, you know. So we get to choose between the devil and God in a way, as the devil is traditionally the father of lies and distorted perceptions. I mean, basically the devil is the unredeemed personality, and it causes misperception of reality. And so we choose the untruths and are veiled from seeing reality as it is. If we go with the personality, the elemental life, the so-called devil. You know, I always try to remind people that the word Satan is not necessarily an evil word, because it has to do with the entire hierarchy of solar angels who came at the what might be called the opening of the planetary heart to assist animal man to make the transition into the fourth kingdom of nature. Kind of interesting that all these kingdoms exist below and above, and yet the fourth kingdom does not. We almost have to wait for it to occur. And it occurs at least in this chain with the assistance of these hearts of fiery love and so many other wonderful names for them, the solar angels. You know, one day the mystery of the solar angels will be revealed, and basically DK says, okay, you cannot reveal that now. You cannot disclose that. You cannot understand it. It's too complex. But you can try. And in trying, you will learn a lot. So truth is stranger than fiction, and all these things are going on a very esoteric level. And as students of esotericism, not yet real esotericists, we have to learn what is factually behind the world of effects, which we constantly notice as obvious. Now, you know, after a while, people get tired of the futility of their perceptions, and they want something deeper. And we, carriers of the light, bearers of the light, should be there with that something deeper to help them bridge into a truer perception of reality, just as we are constantly helped. I mean, why is Master DK, why did he write installment number 2 with Alice Bailey? Why is he going to write installment number 3? You know, it's to lift the consciousness of the people closer to a perception of reality. So choose, and basically the word alternatives is used, and so I'm going to kind of put that in there, A-L-T-E-R, alternatives, choose alternatives. Okay, now I'd like to be able to, sometimes the computer, you know, just has a mind of its own, and pretty soon it really will. I would here face you with these alternatives and would ask you to consider your own position in these matters. Well, I'm sure that, you know, we are convinced students of esotericism, and we wouldn't be wasting our time if we had a different value set by studying with care the Tibetan and carrying out what he says must be carried out. Does the story of Easter and the living Christ carry no truth? And is it not possible that the risen Christ, for that risen Christ to express his power on earth through his chosen instruments? Is there no foundation to the myth of the annual return of the Buddha, holding the door open between Shambhala and the hierarchy so that, at need, intervention may be possible through that open door? Is it only a silly dream and fantasy that at the time of the June full moon, Christ, in the closest cooperation with the Buddha, links with the hierarchy and with humanity? This is the festival of the Christ, festival of goodwill, festival of humanity, whatever we want to call it. Is it quite impossible that when humanity awakens to the fact of this mediatorship and can then avail itself of the straight line of ascent and descent through the doors held open by the Buddha and the Christ, maybe the Buddha's door is open there for 8 minutes, is that correct? Some stupendous appearing may be imminent and suddenly take place. May it not be possible that through the ascent of man's aspiration and spiritual desire, and through the descent of the waiting capital P potencies, certain great changes may take place for which all of the past has been only preparatory, and through which the, through which the Aquarian age of brotherhood and understanding may make itself felt by virtue of these great potencies? Well, you know, it must be that the Tibetan found it necessary to ask us to clarify our minds, our choices, and the alternatives that we are faced with, and to become as clear and definite as possible so that we can be more effective. I know, as a young person, I went through a period of, extreme mentality and disbelief in anything but mentality. And I don't know what it was. I think the, not just books, you know, but somehow the meeting of, with an embodiment of a different way, just turned my life upside down. And then I rediscovered, you know, a lot of work that I have done before. And maybe it's this way for many people. Sometimes you have to concentrate on a fairly exclusive process so that when you include the other preparations you have made, it all is firmer and stands on a more enduring basis. So, you know, I'm just very grateful to have contacted a great friend who is representing the hierarchy in the most sincere way. And I just think, well, what would have happened if that contact had not occurred? And probably in your own life. You can ask yourself, how was it that you became convinced of the reality of the spiritual worlds and started on your path of real learning, of meditation, and of application of these more subtle truths, as if they were really real when everyone around you thinks that you've lost your mind. Okay. The two full moons of May and June present to you a new opportunity to participate in the release of the planetary life from the thraldom, you know, the slavery of the forces of materialism. He's basically telling people how to use the full moons offensively in the war. And we see a number, we get the sense that the Christ and the Buddha and those closest to them are working in the most intense manner, subjectively, to save humanity from its downfall. If you are to do your share in this work of salvage, it will necessitate certain attitudes and activities on your part, which I would like briefly to touch upon, leaving you to take right and appropriate action and to follow with all other disciples and aspirants the indicated stages. So, you know, even now, let us say, I better be careful here. Yeah, so that, you know, we are all involved even now in world salvage. It's a combination of service and saviorship, and the dangers are evident because the door to the place of endless death has been left ajar. And some of these forces, these brothers of unique blindness, have come forth and tried again, and are trying, to negate human accomplishment under the forces of light, as this accomplishment has occurred during the last centuries, particularly. Okay, so there are stages here, and we have to carry forth the right type of action. So what do we have to do? And, you know, whatever it says here from 80 years ago, you can be sure that it's still required of us. Number one, study with care and answer with sincerity and to your own complete satisfactions the questions I put to you earlier in this communication. And when you have done this, you will know where you personally stand. Well, I just would recommend to everybody, you know, go back here to page 222 to 226 and look at the alternatives with which DK has presented us, and intelligently and observantly take your stand so that you'll know, well, exactly where you stand with respect to the great hierarchical effort. For the entire week prior to the May full moon and the June full moon, endeavor to do the following things, and really notice how things have expanded here. Sometimes we talk about the 7-day approach, the 5-day approach, the 3-day approach, but he's almost talking about like a kind of a 2-week approach, 7 before and 7 after. Link up with all disciples, aspirants, and men and women of goodwill throughout the world and in all nations, using the creative imagination. And let's think about this, you know, this really works. So to link up with our brothers and sisters of goodwill and within the new group of world servers, it really is creating a unified energy field. And of course, you can also take it further and include all of humanity, you know, which is true. But an effective working group are those who have the goodwill and those who are working as members of the World Service Group. Then eliminate out of your consciousness all negativity, seeing yourself clearly as ranged on the side of the forces of light. You are therefore not neutral in thought. See to it also that when taking right action in the conflict against the forces of materialism, excuse me, you preserve ever a spirit of love for all individuals who have been swept into the vortex of their potency. And I'll tell you what, he really does emphasize this. You can, you know, as you say, fight like a demon, but you love like an angel. So that's really important. Never to descend into hatred, because that is the way the counterforce works, and we are not that. So, you know, this is going on even 7 days before the full moon and 7 days after. It must take some tremendous concentration to preserve these attitudes, because there are so many fluctuations in our life process at the moment. I'm actually going to see right now where we are in terms of moon position. I suspect we've moved out of Gemini and into the more consolidating sign, Cancer. Yeah, we're 0 degrees into Cancer. Okay. And then C, when meditating and invoking the forces of light, endeavor to forget entirely all your own personal difficulties, tragedies, and problems. Disciples have to learn to carry forward their work for humanity in spite of personality stresses, strains, and limitations. I'm sure we would all find that at times a difficult thing to do. You know, sometimes I say to myself, well, I'm not in the mood to do that particular spiritual work. I'm not in the mood. Well, where's that mood coming from? Maury emphasized the need for good mood, definitely, but it is a personality thing. Now, if there is a broadcast or a webinar and there's no choice, then your mood, so what? The mood has to be set aside, and any kind of inertia or negativity just has to be set aside, and that should be the way we are all the time. But humanity is not perfect, nor are disciples and aspirants perfect. Prepare yourselves thus for the work of the two full moons, keeping your objective clearly in mind and submitting yourselves to an adequate temporary discipline. And there's that note of relief, you know. It's only temporary, even if you do it for 14 days a month. There are other 14 days, but then, of course, there's the new moon. So basically, you could live in this constant hierarchical rhythm. Okay, so this is... okay, so answer the questions. That's one thing. Oh, it always jumps, you know. And get rid of that. Answer the questions. Q-U-E-S. All right. Answer the questions and prepare. Prepare avidly and correctly for the coming full moons, and even a week ahead of time and afterwards. Well, I guess we can work our way up to that as our powers of group concentration increase. I mean, there are practical ways to proceed, and certainly what he's saying here is as important now as it was then. I mean, of course, they were in the middle of a war, a shooting war actively, and many countries were involved. Then number three, for 2 days prior to the full moon, on the day of the full moon itself, and for the two succeeding days, 5 days, endeavor at sunrise, at noon, at 5 o'clock, and at sunset, plus the exact time of the full moon in your own land, to say the great invocation with the intent to invoke, precipitate, and anchor into outer manifestation the waiting potencies. Well, this is very interesting because basically he's saying, you know, GI at the time of the full moon, the exact time. And sometimes we have done that and sometimes not. Do this aloud when possible and in group formation whenever feasible. It is the focused power of your unemotional thought which will bridge the present existing gap and link more closely the two worlds of spiritual activity and human demonstration. These worlds are not yet linked, and the aspirants and disciples are to blame. We have not carried this through nor educated the intelligentsia in such a way that they can actually participate intelligently. What really has to happen is their intelligence has to be turned toward spiritual things, and right now it is largely turned towards material, personal things. Okay, repeat this activity for 3 days each and every month prior to the full moon. The day prior to the full moon, the day of the full moon, and the succeeding day. As a preliminary exercise to these 3 days, you could take an earlier 3 days of preparation and thus increase the effectiveness of your efforts. So, you know, let's just say the timing of your participation is flexible and left to you. So, you know, would it be 14 days, 7 days, 5 days, 3 days? But anyway, you know, there are these moments to say the great invocation. Now, in this case, the great invocation which is being referenced is not yet the one that was given out in 1945, because what we're dealing with here is a letter from the 1940s. But, you know, it's as we have been talking and DK has been writing and I've been trying to respond to it, the first invocation is very powerful and touches very high sources. So we use it. We use it, and we can use it, and we can use them all, depending. I don't think we have right now what's called the rule of evil, because that second invocation ends with the rule of evil now must end. I'm not sure we have that, but we certainly have the threat and the reawakening of those powers that brought humanity into a disastrous condition not long ago. So endeavor at sunrise, at noon, at 5 o'clock p.m. and at sunset, you know, where they are different, plus the exact time of the full moon in your own land, to say the great invocation with the intent to invoke, precipitate, and anchor in outer manifestation the waiting potency. So there are definitely things we can do along the invocatory line. And they're being laid out for us right now. Okay, and repeat this activity for 3 days each and every month. And if you want to, you can do, you could have an earlier 3 days of preparation. So that would be six altogether. And then you'd have three more days, I suppose, after the day after. So this would be 9 days when the Great Invocation, version one, or now three, or even two, is sounded. Well, we have the tools at our disposal, and we have the indication from the Master as to what should be done. So right now, this is the end, roughly, of hour one. And, you know, I'm trying to, I'm always busy stealing time from many other things. And, you know, hoping that it doesn't take forever to get this book to you. But, you know, there's a lot of study involved here and a lot of thinking. So even if you don't have the entire book handy at this time, you know, with some 40 programs or 40 hours of programming right now, you have quite a bit. And do remember A Treatise on White Magic, which is completely done. And do remember that half of the Rays and Initiations is done in video format, with the first half written. And do remember that A Treatise on Cosmic Fire is mostly quite exacting writing, but that the last 100 pages, which have many fascinating things about the spirit, is done in video form. And the stanzas of Zian appearing in different modes is undertaken in video form. So, you know, study very hard, very thoughtfully, and talk with others about your thoughtful study. That's really, really important. Many people the world over, he goes on, have for years been trained to recognize two things. First, the importance of the Waysack Festival at the time of the full moon in May, because it not only objectively links the major Eastern religion with the major Western faith, but because it esoterically provides the key to the open door between Shambhala and the hierarchy, between the purpose of God, still unidentified by man, owing to his relatively low stage of evolution, which makes it beyond the human comprehension at present. I'm sorry, and the method of God, which is love. It provides also the link between the Buddha, temporarily embodying will wisdom, and the Christ, embodying love wisdom. So that's very important, that will wisdom idea. And also between humanity focused in consciousness through the Christ and the hierarchy focused in consciousness through the Buddha. Okay, and this, I suppose, is particularly the festival of goodwill, if hierarchy and the Christ invoking on behalf of humanity is referenced. Well, you know, so basically this is all about the importance of these festivals. Now, you know, basically the Tibetan has hinted that maybe from the time of 1981, the Waysack Festival would undergo a change, and would the Buddha continue to visit that valley? I do remember Mary Bailey in 1981 talking about quite a change in the WASAC presentation, that it seems more and more the responsibility of the new group of world servers. We will learn later, because, you know, according to the assessment of the great ones and regarding humanity's need, the appearance or non-appearance of these great agencies hovering in the aura of the planet will occur or not occur. Always the question is meeting the need, and at the present time, humanity's correct decisions and humanity's needs are a focus, because as the middle kingdom on the cosmic physical plane, or the middle hierarchy, humanity could cause a severe malfunction in what is intended. Okay, so, you know, these are important festivals, and I think the part of wisdom is to continue to tune in at the time of the Taurus full moon, and consider it the Buddha full moon, and consider the Buddha's influence still very operative, whether or not the valley is visited anymore. I think it's in the WASAC message of 1946 where this possibility is indicated, that the WASAC, and Good Friday, we're even told, will begin at some point to fade out of human consciousness and no longer be practiced per se. But something will always be practiced at the higher interlude, and more humanity will learn how to take things over, you know. Isn't that the name? Isn't that what sacrifice is? As he sometimes describes it, taking something over, you know. He gives different understanding of some things that we have interpreted in a certain way, like the word forgiveness. When you read what he says about forgiveness, it's not at all this whole idea of pardon me, you know, please. It's not that at all. It has to do with the gifts of the Spirit, as Dane Rudyar once wrote in that which became a book, The Gifts of the Spirit, and it was astrologically understood what each great constellational lord, although he didn't call it that, would be giving to humanity. Owing to the stress of humanity today and the urgency of the response which that distress evokes in the hierarchy, the synthesis of these two reactions to the world crisis can prove adequate to bring in that outside assistance which could end the conflict along right lines and bring not only relief, but illumination to the consciousness. So, in other words, let's just say, how can we put it, the potential. The potential for emergence was present, and the Buddha approach and the Christ approach were both needed. I guess if ever the saviorship of the combined efforts of these two great sons of God was to be put to the test, it would be during the Second World War, when humanity could have gone down. Now, what they did, I mean, you know, their rank is not as high as the Lords of Liberation, but what the Buddha and the Christ did maybe will one day be revealed, and to a certain extent is revealed in some of these essays. But again, speaking here to a representative body of aspirants and disciples, I would state that the focus and the emphasis is not yet adequate to guarantee this extraplanetary response. Well, the power of invocation must be sincere, strong, and even if in part inchoate, it must rise to the ears, so to speak, of those energies which could be evoked and could make their appearance and could help turn the tide. He promises, you know, for the United States much suffering that lies ahead. As all of that was written in the late 40s, it's hard to say whether that suffering has really occurred. I think it has not. And humanity still has much of its own making from which to suffer. And probably in that period of suffering, there will be a response, an invocatory response, a calling out, oh God or whatever, let this suffering end, and it may reach the ears of those who can actually ameliorate the suffering. I think this is what has happened because for a long time, the Christ delayed any kind of decision about which Master D.K. reported, at least, regarding whether he would come in person in his Mayavarupa, I suppose, or whether he would simply stay on the astral plane or the etheric levels and not put in a tangible appearance. But maybe, you know, something reached him from suffering humanity, and the decision, his decision, was made. I don't think, you know, that he's going to need another vehicle like he did with the Master Jesus in order to appear. I think, you know, the Mayavarupa can appear, and it tends to, says the Tibetan, look very much like the physical vehicle in which the initiate took the fifth initiation. So that would be, you know, I think, very interesting. When did Christ take the fifth initiation? Well, some indications are that it was in Palestine, and yet it doesn't seem to make entirely a lot of sense, because by the time approximately 500 BC took place, he was the head of the hierarchy, and the requirement for that headship is the fifth degree. So later, I'm more inclined to think that the sixth degree was taken with his last appearance, and the seventh degree was begun. Now, you know, we just have to keep advancing so we can even have some kind of idea about what those degrees entail. And the more we help others lift their own prospects individually and in group form, the more the door opens to us, again, individually, but really in group form. Okay, so I would state that the focus and the emphasis is not yet adequate to guarantee this extra planetary response. Okay, the outside assistance could end the conflict along right lines and bring about the illumination of human consciousness. It must be that the invocatory power did increase because, you know, the conflict was actually ended along right lines. It was, I think, one of the most dramatic kinds of events that occurred in the history of humanity, and who knows the details of the battle of Kurukshetra, but this on a higher turn of the spiral and in a different root race was analogous. Now, you know, I was talking to some people in the Agni Yoga Society long ago. The leader of that group, she was Mrs. Fosdick, you know, and she knew Helena Rurik very well and so forth. When I told her that I was a student of the Tibetan, there was this peculiar reaction because of the way that Helena Rurik, and I have to think of, that it was on a bad day, wrote about Alice Bailey and the Tibetan in ways that would align the Agni Yoga students against her and him, and it was really most unfortunate. Naturally, being more second-ray in persuasion, the Alice Bailey students were able to take in Agni Yoga without that kind of conflict that appeared when the Agni Yoga students approached Alice Bailey. Somewhere on this computer, you know, are some of those horrible letters written by Helena Rorick, which I just have to think, as Philip Lindsay has analyzed, occurred because of some astrological paranoiac condition. And, that, you know, when people who are so high in the work and so close to the master and who upon whom the master depends to bring through his teaching, when such people are not understanding each other and are accusing each other, you kind of wonder, what hope do we have? But, you know, every one of us is an object lesson to the others, and as they study our lives, as can be the case of the near ones, you know, when a disciple is nearby, the near ones study the case, it can be instructive and can help improve the response. Nevertheless, okay, the adequate response, okay, that's not yet adequate. Not yet. But this is 1940, you know, and I think it rapidly had to become adequate. Nevertheless, it could be if in your own life of meditation and of discipline, in your speech with others and in the general tone of your intercourse with your environment, you can eliminate the negative and more selfish reactions, and for the sake of human welfare, temporarily at least, live at your highest point of aspiration. Yes, all this could be possible, and even today. And the demand that we do this today is not any different than this demand 80 years ago. I'm like a broken record here. I keep on repeating that, but it just must be obvious to anyone who can really think about it, that we are in a serious situation today, and many of the old sort of materialistic Black Lodge methods are rising again and are receiving from some in high places sanction. Hey, it's okay. You're a dictator. Hey, it's okay. You imprison people for long periods of time without really proving that they are guilty. It's okay. You know, you want to kill journalists, it's okay, you know. That kind of license is just, it's just not allowed. Okay. Okay. So basically here, we're looking here at, what are we looking at here? Okay, training for years. Recognize two things. First, the importance of the Waysack Festival, etc. That's the first thing. Okay? The Waysack and the Festival of Goodwill. Now, the second thing that we have to recognize, sometimes DK has so many subcategories, you know, that it's hard to underline or outline them, let's just say. Secondly, you have been trained in the belief that all the information which I have given out anent the relation of the Buddha and the Christ and of the hierarchy, humanity and Shambhala will form part of the coming new world religion, and that the theme of the great approaches, you know, avataric descents and of high beings descending with their power of energy into redemptively into the lower worlds, and that the theme of the great approaches will constitute the basic fundamentals of the future spiritual teaching. Well, okay, this is how we've been trained to think. We need for Master DK to find that his investment of time has been with good reason, and that somehow some success, spiritually speaking, emerges from the people and the groups with whom he has spent so much time and energy. This, too, you must have in mind for the work you are asked to do at the coming two full moons and during the less important full moons of the year. Notice he doesn't include Aries here for some reason, is not only related to the present emergency, but is also constructively related to the future faith of humanity. Bear this also in mind. It's very important to have a wisely believing humanity. We don't want blind faith and belief in ridiculous and childish things, but when the master is valued for the kind of information he is presenting, then the faith in things hoped for, as it were, you know, the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things unseen will so motivate humanity that they'll be working in the right direction. And the farther you go on the spiritual path, the more obvious selfish response becomes. You will note that what I have said concerns your mental attitudes and your emotional reactions to present world affairs. It concerns also your soul tension, your willingness to undergo soul tension, which may not be for the personality the most comfortable thing, and your capacity to stand as part of the great chain of intermediaries who are today being called to the service of the race in an hour of urgency. It concerns the organizing of yourself as an integrated personality in relation to your soul and to humanity. It involves the recognition of the work which you can do from the point of integration. And I would ask you to ponder with care upon this paragraph stating the possibilities of your task. Your mental attitudes and your emotional reactions. Now, obviously, in a video of this nature, we can't really stop here and ponder together for any length of time. But as you're using this on your own or within classes and so forth, within study groups, you can stop the video at any point and you can ponder as he seems to require. Do we live a life of soul tension? Is our mental attitude fed by the soul? Are our emotional reactions fairly clear of glamour and distortions and, you know, foggy preventions in the sight of the truth? And can we really organize ourselves effectively as an integrated personality under the will of the soul to do something good in the world? So the second point was that we have to keep the New World religion in mind and the fact that the Christ and the Buddha hierarchy of matter in all of those centers will form part of the coming world religion, and the great approaches will be emphasized. There is help from above, and if we learn properly in this age when scientific invocation will be scientifically taught, then we can call in on our own level the presence of those great potencies which are needed for our redemption. Of course, Sanat Kumara knows about this, obviously, and the Christ and the hierarchy know. It's only we aspirants and disciples, we just maybe don't get it yet, and we have to learn how to behave in a certain way to facilitate this blending of the higher and the lower. Okay. I call you to a period of clear thinking. I seek not to mold your political approach to life, but I do seek to aid you to see humanity and its welfare, not only in terms of your own nation, or your own political group, but in terms of the whole, and as we, the teachers on the inner side, are forced to see it. It must not be a very pleasant sight, because there is so much degradation and so much unfairness, you know, so much, simply unfairness where there is a glut and a dearth, you know. Neither one of them is healthy, neither one. So clear thinking, and what does clear thinking do? It helps eliminate glamour. And you can choose the politics you like, but let it be the type of politics where you think in terms of the whole and the welfare of the whole. That is indispensable, because as we know, you know, we have only to get into election season, and with that, well, these days at least, with that sort of mantra, America First, running around, it's not a very inclusive mantra, is it? So, and there will be, you know, there will be a party of wholeness before long. Right now we forget that there is one humanity. So often we forget it. And we think just in terms of our national boundaries, which is very limited thinking, isn't it? It's one planet, it's one humanity. You know, always the application of the term one is necessary at a certain point of realization. There are the many, but there is the one. And we have to learn to see both simultaneously, even as the hierarchy can see both simultaneously. I seek to see you free yourselves from the condition where you are swayed by propaganda of a political, national, or religious kind, and deciding for yourself where you, as a soul, must stand in this world crisis, and on which side you will stand, and the emphasis of any influence you may wield. So he doesn't want a standardized man. He wants people to be self-responsible, and by the self we mean not only the integrated personality, but the higher self as well, where you stand as a soul. I would have you note where your highest ideals will lead you, and whether the springs of your life decisions and attitudes are truly pure and unadulterated. This, you know, he seems to be calling for a great self-knowing on the part of his disciples. Well, we're getting to the 1.5 hours, and I'm not sure, must I stop? We'll see. I seek to draw your attention away from the many minor issues, the many clamoring voices, and from the widespread concentration upon the unworthy pasts, plural, and the undesirable aspects of all nations, without exception. Right. Okay. So not the emphasis upon all the undesirable secondary things, because, you know, forgetting the things which lie behind, I will strive toward my higher spiritual possibilities. So he wants us to take our mind off of those undesirable things and help you to see with clarity the major dualism with let's see, can I get this? Because this is one of those things which underlies the present world conflict. Might against right, materialism against higher values, freedom against imprisonment, cruelty against fair dealing, liberty and safety against fear and aggression. He wants us to see these things. Now, is it any different? Now, I just saw, you know, what is it? The people who make in India, the people who make the clothes for modern Western world, they're getting about 13 cents an hour. And they can't live on that, you know, can't live on that at all. So, you know, and we go to the stores and we want a good deal, and we buy a shirt for $10 or something, and when the real cost of that might be three times that much if there was a fair and living wage paid mostly, you know, to these women who have a terribly difficult life. I mean, we have to be aware of the consequences and the origin of the goods which come to us, and whether we are breaking the backs of people in other parts of the world. Well, okay, then having balanced these pairs of opposites within your consciousness, decide where your loyalty, your interest, and your ability to serve will be placed, and then go forward to further the ends of one or the other of the two groups. Notice how free he leaves us, okay? You want to choose the left-hand path? Well, you can. You can, at no matter what cost. So choose one or the other, and at no matter what cost, but knowing where you stand and why you stand there. So he's really, you know, this is a big responsibility download, I might say. Okay, and I'm going to say. Okay, so responsibility download. Oh, well, this is the end. I received the signal that this had to, you know, terminate at this point, and now I see I just have one short paragraph, and I'm pretty much at the hour and a half point. That the will of Shambhala may be enabled to express itself through love and through the meditation of the hierarchy working through all disciples, aspirants, and men and women of goodwill, is the earnest prayer of your fellow disciple and co-worker. This is, of course, before it was revealed that this was Master Jwal Kul. He was simply known as the Tibetan. So this is a perfect place to stop. And we're up to page 229. And this is program number 20. We've been talking about what we have to do to make divine intervention really possible. And we're starting at page 222 to 229. It's really seven pages, not very much, but there's a lot to consider. Don't you agree? And are we not grateful to the Tibetan for his voluminous work? and how much Alice Bailey has somehow contributed to this despite her physical liabilities. You know, she never allowed herself an alibi. So this is number 21, externalization 229, and we'll see. When I do the next, I'm not sure, so I'll just put XX, and we will see. Okay, friends, it's the gratitude that we have to have for the Tibetan and his, well, I mean, that whole chain, you know, Master KH and the Christ and Sanat Kumara, allowing this ageless wisdom to come to us and straighten our minds out so we know what the real values are. I mean, it's just an extraordinary a gift, and of course we have to be worthy of the gift, obviously, don't we? We're still in 1940 when we go ahead, and we will go ahead before long. So all the best, lots of love and many blessings, and study hard and meditate deeply and apply whatever you can and find the hints, which are the hints for you. You know, out of the mass of teaching, the hints will appear, and your way forward will be determined by the intuition. We're right now not having Master DK say, well, it would be best if you did this, okay? not on an individual basis. He may say it on a group basis. And later will come more specific individual teaching, but the important thing is that we pick up the hints that may jump off the page to us. Okay, see you soon.